Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to talk about Camilo, a really powerful learning management system that's being used by over a million people all around the world. You're going to want to hear about this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch, episode 206, recorded April 4th, 2012. Camilo.
Floss Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, helping keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing its vehicles at Ford.com/technology.
It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you as often as I can, almost weekly, we're getting back to weekly again, all the great stuff, the big projects, little projects, projects you might not have heard of, including perhaps today's guest. But before we talk about today's guest, let's go ahead and bring on my co-host, Dan Lynch. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, and it's sort of interesting that this project, as I was researching it, seems to have more depth to it than I thought. But we're going to have today, let me find my notes here, we're going to have Yannick Warnier, who's going to be talking to us about Camilo or Chamilo. I'm not sure which of the two it is, but we'll probably maybe both. We don't know. But Camilo appears to be a learning platform, a place where students can interact with their teachers maybe in real time or maybe asynchronously, where like the course lessons can be put there and maybe even some homework and some tests and stuff on grading systems and things like that. So there's a lot of players in this space, and I was sort of surprised to see how far or how much Camilo actually has in it. I mean, you might have heard of things like Blackboard or Moodle and stuff, and so we're probably going to get into the comparison of this with that sometime during the show. I hope we do, because we've got some good questions about that. Unfortunately, I haven't done a lot of research on this because, like every show, I'm pressed for time right before the show. So I've studied about 20 minutes on the website. Have you looked at this, Dan?
Yeah, I had to go on the demo site today. They've got a demo site you can check out at campus.camilo.org. And it looks really interesting. Much like you, I've heard of Moodle. I've heard a lot about Moodle, but I don't know so much about Camilo. So it'd be good to find out more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that'll be really good. But we're going to take a brief moment to listen to Leo Laporte talk about a very important message.
Oh, hi. How are you? I don't mean to interrupt Floss Weekly, but I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about Ford and the amazing Ford App Link. You know, anybody who watches Floss Weekly understands how important an API is. And I have to say, this is one of the things that really kind of blows me away. I don't know of any other car company that would do what Ford is doing with their Ford Sync. You've heard us talk about Ford Sync before. The idea is you keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road. That's the safest thing for a driver. Ford, with all their studies, knows that the worst thing a driver can do is reach down, look at a screen down here, touch buttons down here. For safety, but we still want to be connected to the outside world, and that's where Sync is so great. Hands on the wheel, eyes on the road, you press the button on the steering wheel or behind the steering column, and it goes, boom, what do you want? And you talk to your car, like Knight Rider, like Kit. It's amazing, and the car responds. And we've talked about, you could set the cabin temperature, you can get directions, sports scores, horoscopes, all sorts of stuff. Well, App Link allows third-party app developers to write applications that interface to your car. So you can use Ford Sync to control Pandora, for instance, and say, you know, play my song list. Thumbs up, thumbs down, bookmark this song. Stitcher's on there. OpenBeak will read tweets to you. Now they've added iHeartRadio, so you get a huge number of radio stations that you can listen to, and they can use their ThumbPlay service, which allows you to use voice commands to find your saved stations. You know, you can say, hey, I want to listen to KFI today, and it'll jump to KFI. Skip to the next song, give a song a thumbs up. I mean, this is really slick stuff. It's kind of bringing modern internet radio into your car. They also have NPR, so you can listen to live newscasts from NPR. All of this without taking your hands off the wheel and your eyes off the road. That's where Ford Sync is so amazing. The best way to find out about this, go to a Ford dealer and drive one It is truly fantastic. I wish my Mustang had this app link. It's in the new Fords, though. So make sure you ask the dealer, I want to use the app link. Bring your smartphone. They'll show you. This is great. They'll show you how it works. You can also read more about it at Ford.com/technology. Ford and the 21st century and Sync and app link. It's just a match made in heaven. Find out more at Ford.com/technology. We now return you to Floss Weekly. Randall?
Well, thank you, Leo. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Yannick Warner, welcome to the show.
Hello, Randall. Thank you for having me.
Hey, great to see you finally after all these conversations back and forth and email. Where are you speaking to us from?
I'm currently in Lima, Peru.
Lima, Peru. I've actually been there. It was about a year ago. I was on an end of a cruise and I actually went from Lima up to Cusco to go to Machu Picchu, and I had a great time with that, and then came back to Lima and spent 6 hours sitting in the airport, which is not very fun, but it was really a lot of fun. So I was fairly close to you at some point, but this isn't a travelogue show. This is actually a show about the project you wanted to talk to us today about, which is Camilo. What is that?
It should be Camilo. Actually, we decided to name it Camilo in the beginning, and then we had a lot of success in the Latin America area, and basically it's mostly impossible to make people from Spanish language pronounce ch as a k. So we abandoned that and we accept both pronunciations.
Okay. So Camilo, if I say it either way, then you'll probably be okay with it. That's great. So I gave at the beginning of the show a sort of a high-level view of it, maybe compared to other products and stuff too. But why don't you start with sort of the background and what problem is this solving and what category of software is Camilo?
Okay. On the technical aspect, Camilo is an e-learning platform, so it allows you to manage courses online. It's actually mostly used to accompany presential courses. We call them presential. I mean, courses that are taught in a classroom. And they offer you a set of additional tools which allow students to get their documents, to follow, to pass exams online and that kind of stuff that will complement the classroom courses. In comparison to other platforms, basically, the most important aspect of Camilo is that it's much easier to use. So we have people telling us how we didn't really take the measurements ourselves, but we have people that regularly train teachers to create courses online, and they say they have like 5 times less training to do with Camilo than they would do with Moodle, for example. Moodle, which is one of the closest tools in the open source area.
Okay, so I would reach for Camilo when I am a instructor in a normal classroom setting to assist me giving materials out to students. Is this also for students cooperating with each other on projects?
Yes, it also allows that. So it integrates a kind of a small social network tool. There's a lot of hype currently about social learning. So basically learning through the people you know and through your coworkers and that kind of stuff. And because the hype goes there, and we had that kind of a question about whether we should link the software directly to other platform, other social network systems, or whether we should develop something inside Camilo. And we decided to develop it inside because mostly a lot of people that use Camilo are universities or large companies, and they don't always offer the possibility to connect to an external social network. So what we did is, they filter it and so you can't access because otherwise it uses a lot of bandwidth and that kind of stuff. So what we did is develop a small social networking tool inside the platform so people can interact with the other people that are learning the same courses at the same time, for example, or a bit later. Yeah, and basically, I mean, if you look at e-learning as a philosophy of how software tools can enhance learning, it's mostly because they allow you to reach a larger audience and they allow you to practice the courses, or they allow the students to practice the courses. So you can actually practice and practice and practice again and again without requiring the physical work of a teacher checking your answers. You know, you can elaborate an automated test and then just give the results and the feedback automatically to the students. So that really brings a huge time save in terms of providing the course, because you don't need a teacher for 20 students. You need a teacher for 150, for example.
Wow. So I was just, I'm curious about that. And so this is, I'm trying to find the scope of this project. Would it also be possible to do a teaching without having any sort of physical presence as well? Could we do this for use for distant learning too?
Sure. You can have, we have actually all kinds of users, and some of them are training centers who have mostly classroom courses and training. And what they do is put the platform as an additional tool, so the students in class can practice the exercises, for example, and then ask for the teacher who is there to simply help them when they have a problem. Which means that, you know, you don't have to have the teacher coming along and leading all the students through the exam. They can just go through the exam by themselves and then ask for the teacher when they have a problem.
So that would be sort of a synchronous learning, but it's also good for asynchronous learning, right?
Yeah, it's both.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, it depends on how you use it. You know, it's just really finding out your way to use it. But actually, we offer a lot of tools, and mostly teachers can just, they have, like, in every course, you have 20 tools. You know, you have a chat, you have a forum, you have documents, you have exercises. And the teacher just pick the tools that they want to provide to their students. So you don't have to do it completely synchronous or completely asynchronous. You can just pick, depending on the tools that you're using, you get into the asynchronous or the synchronous mode.
Wow. Okay, so I'm excited about this because, you know, one of the many hats that I wear is I run a training company. And we've been actually looking for the kinds of software that would actually let me do, you know, I've been asked more and more for like distant learning or asynchronous learning. So I'm actually somewhat familiar with this area and trying to figure out the good tools for this. Does this allow for direct video linking too? Can I be standing in front of a whiteboard and have them see my face and chat back and forth that way?
Sure. We don't develop it ourselves, but we did in the past and it didn't go that well. So so we abandoned that track. But we're using Big Blue Button, which is another open source software. I think it's LGPL, and it's actually offering the possibility to have a video classroom. So exactly how you just mentioned, you have a black whiteboard, you have a small video window, and then you have a chat box, and you can upload your PDF presentations, and you can write over them, and that kind of stuff. And in the latest version of Big Blue Button, which might be one of your next Floss Weekly sessions, you can actually record the videos and play them back afterwards.
Well, we've actually had Big Blue Button on about, I think it was about three years ago. It was one of the first shows we did, actually, after I took over the show. So I'm familiar with that product as well. So that's interesting. So the other parts of the mechanisms, though, so we have the ability to do published documents. You mentioned forums, so people can chat back and forth. Taking tests. What is that like? Do you just set up like a multiple choice test, or can it be something more elaborate?
It can be very elaborate. So it really depends on what you want to do. As I said before, I mean, Camilo is very easy to use. So what we tend to do is hide all the complicated options. So when you start building a test, you will see like just, you know, you have to put the title and the introduction to the test, and then you can start writing questions. But you can actually, there is an advanced options drop down, which you can open, and then you have like 20 options about the test. So it depends really on what you want to do. You can do exams where the students won't see the results until the teacher give them these results. You can have auto-evaluation tests. So the student just answers a question and then he gets the answer immediately, telling him, you know, you did right or you did wrong and why he did so. And you can have I don't want to call that learning path because it's it's some other tool that we have, but you have a way to design questions with different paths that you can follow depending on your answers. So if you did answer that one right, then you go left, and if you answered that one wrong, then you go right, and then maybe you come back to the first question once you've done that alternative path, and then you can follow on. It really depends on what you want to do with your test.
It sounds really flexible, which is obviously great for course design and so on. I want to kind of change tack a little bit here, because I want to ask a bit about the history of the project, because I noticed that you forked from Docios, I think it was. But I mean, sure. It seems to me that a lot of projects, seem to fork almost frivolously. But I noticed through the documentation that you spent a year trying to avoid forking. So can you tell us that story and how all this came about?
Yeah, sure. The whole project goes back to 2001 when the ClaroLine project was launched. And then that one was formed between ClaroLine and Docios in 2004. And then in 2009, we had a lot of conflicts inside the community and between. I mean, the trademark, the Docios trademark, was actually owned by a single person who was the owner of the Docios company, and that didn't give the community much flexibility about how to manage things and how to be able to maybe launch an alternative version for investigation and that kind of stuff. So there were a lot of conflicts in 2009, and we tried to find ways to improve communication inside the community and the partners of the company, and that didn't work out. So that's one of the main reasons why we split. Another one is ethical. The Chaos Project, how it developed itself, was more focused on companies, on businesses. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But basically, after, I think it was in 2008, so it was after 4 years of the Docios project, in which I've been involved since 2004. So I've worked as a lead developer on Docios before becoming one for Camilo. And basically in 2009, I was asked to remove features from the free version to put them in the pro version. So I really didn't accept that. And that's why I personally changed. And apart from that, it also fixed a lot of issues that we had with the brand name. It's actually, I've spoken recently with Michael Widenius from MariaDB now, and it's mostly the same kind of problem. You know, it's the trademark, and you have a free project, and you can't really destroy the free project. But if Oracle, for example, buys MySQL, they buy the trademark, and then they can prevent people from doing stuff with the trademark. So with the name of the project, and so you get, I mean, people get involved into an open source project mostly for the other people who are in the project, but also because there is a unique name which is unifying all those people into a common project. And when you take out the name, then you have people having to decide on a new name, and then not being sure about what will happen with the first project, and so doubt is starting to spread, and so people hesitate, and you lose part of the community when you split, because you know the other ones I mean, we had that. So we went into Camilo. We launched that. We did a lot of efforts in contacting new people for the project, because ethically we couldn't either go to the Chaos people and say, you know, we launched the Camilo project and now we're all there and that kind of stuff. So it took us a very long time, actually a year and a half, to start getting people involved into the project again. I mean, people that we didn't know about. So yeah, that's pretty much, I think, the story in short.
Yeah, no, that's really, really interesting. I was really interested by what you're saying about, you know, being asked to remove features. That's obviously an ideological thing for you. And I noticed that you're under GPL version 3, which can be a controversial version of the license, it seems, in some quarters. So is copyleft a big thing for you? Because obviously this is what has enabled you to fork the project. I mean, not that you can't fork permissive license projects, but it prevents someone coming in and buying the company and, you know, proprietarizing the software. So is it important to you guys to keep a copyleft element in there?
Yes, I mean, the GPL 3 move was actually to be able to include libraries like Apache and that kind of stuff, because we couldn't do that with the GPL 2. But it's also because it has a wider protection in terms of international law, as far as we could read. But it's, I mean, in terms of the trademark itself of Camilo, we had the problems with the Chaos company before, we decided to buy the trademark but make it owned by the Camilo Association. So we started the non-profit association, actually, which is like the biggest organizational change in regards to the previous project. We started a non-profit association and then we bought the trademark Camilo, so, you know, so we avoid problems with other private companies then buying the trademarks. But basically the idea of the nonprofit association is that people can get involved into the project without having to ask for the permission of one single person. So it's like a democratic vote to get some kind of use of the trademark.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely important, as you say, to kind of decentralize these things and make sure that one person doesn't have complete control over the whole thing. I was interested recently that I was reading about, we've talked a little bit about Moodle, which I know is one of the other kind of open source e-learning platforms. And we haven't mentioned Blackboard, which is probably the biggest kind of proprietary, as far as I know anyway, in America, it's the most popular proprietary platform for this kind of stuff. And in the past, they've kind of bought up competitors and tried to, you know, close them down and integrate their products and stuff. Yeah. And this week, they came out and bought two of the major Moodle support companies in NetSpot and Moodle Rooms, I think it was. So, I mean, is that a problem, that this area is very competitive and you've got big proprietary players who are trying to eke away at your, you know, your kind of base there?
Yeah, that's always a problem in some way. I mean, Blackboard is very aggressive in terms of dominating the market. You know, they bought a lot of competitive businesses in the past. They bought WebCity, they bought Angel, which were companies that had a great success in e-learning platforms, all proprietary. But the thing is, obviously, when you have to start trying to find your way into buying an open source project, it's more complicated, and that's kind of what I like with open source, is that you never end up actually you can, as MySQL have shown, but you have less probabilities of being bought, and then the open source character of your software is just removed, you know, or annihilated for the future, which is what happens with MySQL, what happens with other projects as well. But in the case of Blackboard buying Moodle Rooms and another provider, they actually bought in 1 week 150 people getting involved into Moodle. So it's like, you know, it's scary. we think that because of the way we build the nonprofit association, and we thought about the statutes and how to include new members and who could vote and that kind of stuff, you know, we've included inside the rules of the association, if you want to be an official provider, you actually have to contribute to the project. So we asked before you get recognized as a member to commit code or documentation and that kind of stuff, and also to pass an exam that includes questions about open source. So, you know, we're just making sure that the people who get involved into the project and have a decision power understand the rules of open source and understand the principles and in some way agree with these rules. Yeah, I don't know, but the Blackboard buying Moodle rooms, I think it's scary. I think it actually means that probably a lot less work would be put into Moodle. I hope they'll get out of this. I mean, Moodle is for us, it's a competitor in some way, but it's also a good reference, you know, when you explain, for example, because it's a leader in the market, when we try to explain what is Camilo, then we can just say, you know, it's Moodle a bit easier, and that's making things much more easy for us to promote the software, because if people don't know Camilo, there is a big chance that they will know Moodle if they're involved into some kind of e-learning activity.
Well, you know, that's actually, I was looking at implementing Moodle to do some of this distance learning, and I now am just excited by the fact that you said it's like Moodle, but easier. Maybe that means I'll actually give this a try. Instead of, I was looking at Moodle and, oh God, this thing's like full of options and installation requirements are crazy and everything. So that is one of the questions I want to bring up. How are there hosted solutions of this, and is it also easy for me to install it on a server somewhere?
Yeah, it's a LAMP stack. So as long as you have, you know, PHP, MySQL, Apache or whatever, Nginx any other web server, you can actually install it quite easily, like most LAMP stack software. It doesn't have a lot of requirements, at least in version one. I know we should talk about that as well in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can install it pretty easily. We know we've compared. There's a video on YouTube that we've made like 2 years ago about the differences in installation between Moodle and Camilo. And you have actually, I think you have six installation screens which all fit into one browser page. And for Camilo, and then when you look at Moodle, you have like 25 screens which all scroll down and so. It's really only the installation. It doesn't really matter, you know, but it's always making us laugh because we're trying to explain to people how much easier it can be. And then we fall into this. That's too easy for us. You know, when you have something like that, some kind of a comparison like that, then you don't have to go any further. You know, you just say, you know, look at the installation and then come back. You know, you'll understand how different it is. That's mostly, I don't think there would be any kind of dependency stopping you from installing Camilo.
And what kind of hardware do you need in terms of scaling? Like if I have, I don't know, like if I have 100 students that are interacting with me daily, is that just one little machine, or do we need to start thinking about high availability and lots of stuff racked together?
It's a little machine. It's very light. So we got into, I mean, we had one installation with two servers, actually two PCs with 6 gigs of RAM, and actually got to 800 simultaneous users. It's different from a Drupal installation. You know, simultaneous users mean not anonymous people that will get a lot of caching and stuff. You actually get every user has his own session with his own courses, with his own content. So it's you can't do much caching there. So we had two servers and two PCs from, I don't know, I think there were PCs that we bought in 2006. and they were running 800 simultaneous users. The critical aspect here is I mean to measure how much resources you will need is the number of simultaneous users that you will require. Now, we've had that, and then because it started to become a bit slow with 800, the university into which we had this installation asked us to set up a kind of a larger installation. In my opinion, they went a bit overboard in terms of hardware, but now they have 7 servers, which are there are 3 load balanced Apaches and 2 master MySQL configuration, one file server and 2 failover Varnish servers, caching reverse proxy stuff. And that actually, it was on Tuesday, they reached 3,350 simultaneous users without really feeling any kind of stress on the Apache servers.
Wow.
So we're quite happy with that. Obviously, it's kind of a complex installation. It doesn't have anything to do with Camilo itself. I mean, you can just drop it on the Apache server and that's it once you have the cluster set up. But that gives you an idea of how much you can get. I mean, I'm pretty sure we can. I mean, seeing the load of the server, we should get to 6 or 7 times that load before the servers really have a problem.
Wow. You said MySQL. Does it also port to Postgres, or are you looking at that?
We are looking at that. We have like a very independent layer of database internally, but we never really got to test it with Postgres. So I'm pretty sure it's a matter of 2-3 days of work to actually review all the queries and make sure that there's nothing MySQL specific in there.
It would also be nice if you had, you talked about master replication, but that always has its own thorniness to it. I'm wondering if you had also looked at divvying up your queries so that you could have a single master and multiple read slaves.
I'm leading a few Drupal projects, and then we're getting some inspiration from the Drupal projects from time to time. Well, from the Drupal core actually from time to time, and yeah, I mean that would be quite easy to do actually for us. I mean it's a matter of splitting the queries. We're not really scared about doing any kind of change like this. Yeah, I mean, the scary part of last year was setting up the 7 servers, replication stuff, and then Camilo worked right away. We made a few tuning things that will get into the next version of Camilo, which is actually getting released at the end of the month. I think it's a matter of having someone having the need of that kind of a feature, and that should be right.
And now, what kind of deployment do you have on this so far? It sounds like the 7 system one was sort of the bleeding edge for the highest number of users, perhaps. But are many campuses using this now? Many in other organizations? Yeah.
We have a reported number of 1,900 campuses using it. I think it's difficult to measure because what we do is in the administration panel of Camilo, you have an option that says, do you want to report your use of the software to the main project? And so if you check that option, then we get reporting about your campus, the number of courses you have, the number of students you have, and that's it. And so getting those numbers is actually how we measure the user of Camilo. And currently we know that we have around the world around 1 million users and about 1,900 portals. But it might be more than that. We don't know. I tweeted today like a map of the use of Camilo around the world, and it's a number I'm very proud of. But because we started that new project early in 2010, actually, I'm proud of covering currently 174 countries in terms of use of our free campus of Camilo. So it's not about the statistics when you install a portal, but we have a free campus, you know, campus.camilo.org. And people can go there and practice, make a quick course and see if they like the project and then install their own version. But in that portal, it's running on one server, one recent server, but it currently has 120,000 users registered, and I think there are 18,000 courses. And it's a single server, but we get on this server, we get like maximum 550 simultaneous users. So the bleeding edge is the seven servers installation, but we also get big numbers on another kind of measurement on the free campus.
Now, while we were talking, I'm just being more and more impressed by the numbers. So that's really amazing. I'm stunned here. With that right. kind of usage base, what's the size of your committers? I mean, how many people are committing to this, and what's sort of the commit rate? Are you getting like, you know, 10 patches a minute or a patch every day or something in between?
No, we actually. Currently, we're probably around 15 commits a day. Okay. We have actually three core developers for the version that is used mostly, and we have another team working on a parallel version, which is more focused on sharing content and reusing existing Creative Commons content, which is a more recent project. When they have like 8 people working on it, so there's like 3 for the version that is used on the free campus, and 8 people working on another version. We're not all full-time developers. There is one full-time developer for the version 1 and one full-time developer for the version 2, and all the other ones are occasional developers, and that's pretty much it.
So what's the business model behind this? How do you make your money? Is it all just a passion, yeah. or do you actually have some way of turning this into some sort of cash at some point?
It is a professional activity as well. So what we do is actually install, set up, and develop more features for companies and universities. Currently our market is half universities and half companies. I mean, we have providers in Belgium, in Spain, and in Peru. And I mean, just talking about the Belgian and Peruvian branches, we are dealing with customers in about 25 countries around the world. So it really depends. So far, it's still very difficult in terms of business, because it's just difficult to promote an open source platform for education in a way that will generate a lot of money. But it's actually starting to work better and better. This year, we participated to Expo eLearning, which is like the biggest fair in the Spanish world, Spanish speaking world, about e-learning, and we had really a great success. I mean, many people came to us and said, you know, I heard about Camilo and I think it's great, and that kind of stuff. But when we go to a professional fair like this, it's still awkward to say, you know, we don't sell the platform, because people are not used to having the platform for free. They just, you know, they just expect you to have a preset offer that says, you know, for 5,000 users, I will sell you the license, and then you will install it on your server, or I'll install it on your server. In this case, what we do is provide hosting, provide installations, provide training on the software, and then provide new developments. And in general, the interesting aspect of developments there is that obviously the official providers have proven, as I said previously, have proven that they understand the open source model, so they know how to contribute. So when a customer hires them, they know how to bring those commits, those code changes to us, and then we can integrate it, because that is something that is failing in other open source projects is that it's that companies that make business with it are not actually contributing to the project. So basically we're starting to work quite well. Our company, for example, BizNest, is it's kind of wordplay, you know, nest of bees. We were half working on Drupal projects and half working on Camilo project, and now it's starting to really get the upper side of the Camilo project. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I'm really impressed by that idea of testing the providers on their open source credentials. I don't know of any other product that does that, or any project, I should say, that does that. That's really clever. I'd be interested to see if more people take that on and pick that up. So I want to ask a little bit about, very quickly, I'm going to slightly jump off topic. I know you've already discussed the platform stuff, but I have to ask, is this packaged for any of the major Linux distributions or anything like that? Is there any, I know it's a LAMP application, but is there any easy installer or anything I could use?
No, you'll have to download the sources, right, and install it as any LAMP project. We actually talked about that a few years ago, but the stopping point for us is that when you make a package for Linux distribution, you have to comply with the location of specific directories. You know, if you have variable files of files that will get added by the users, then that directory has to be located in a specific folder in the Linux hierarchy. And we didn't comply, so we thought about doing the changes, but there were many things to modify to do that, so we don't have it. We could do one package that would not comply with these rules, and that would be maybe a faster installer. But otherwise, it's just, you know, you download the sources, you install Apache, MySQL, PHP, and then you drop the sources in a directory, and you just go there with your browser and install it. The installer is, as I said, it's 6 screens, and basically it asks you for your database credentials, and that's it.
Oh, it sounds easy enough. I have to ask the Linux packaging question to keep all the Linux people happy. So you talked a bit about the fact that there's at the moment Camilo 1 and also Camilo 2, which is upcoming. It sounds like they're very different, because we talked a little bit about this on Twitter earlier. You were saying that they're going to be possibly named differently, and you've got different developers working on each project. So what are the differences between them, and why are these differences there?
Okay, the project number one is really the one that goes that forked from the previous project, so it's using the same code base. Highly modified, but the one that we had since 2001, and it just accumulates on the reworks that we did and the patches that we included to support browsers since then until now. On the other side, the Camilo 2 project, which will be renamed, we'll have Camilo 1 be named Camilo LMS, which is Learning Management System, which is what it is, Camilo 2 will be called Camilo LCMS, which is Learning Content Management System, because it focuses more on reusing existing content. Now, we launched the project thinking that, you know, that group of developers who are mainly university people, employees, would get something interesting, and maybe we could use it for version one, for version two, because at that time we were at version 1.8, 1.8.0, and we thought, you know, maybe we can just prepare that one, and when it's ready, just move to that one. But then recently we really think, everybody, I mean, all the people involved in the project, that the two philosophies are just too different for now. So we are going to have the Camilo project host actually two different software inside the boundaries of the association and the Camilo project. And we're happy with that. Mm. And so it's basically, you know, if you want to be reusing content mainly, we think that the markets for the two are really different. I mean, mostly universities will be using the Camilo LCMS version, and probably companies and colleges. And, you know, we have colleges, primary schools using Camilo. That was really funny to discover at some point, but we designed it initially for universities, and then we had some primary school teachers tell us, you know, we're using your project. Actually, I have over there, I put it there to show it, but you know, maybe you've heard about that OLPC project.
The OLPC.
Actually, we have several schools using the Camilo installation. We did some work to make it work. The Camilo LMS itself as a server on one of these, which are really low resources machines, and to make it possible for people without connectivity to the internet to actually use Camilo in the classroom. And yeah, we have really different philosophies between the two. So we're not in a hurry to merge them, but probably in a few years' time, we'll have something to join both teams.
Mm. That's impressive that you can run it on the OLPC. I mean, that shows how little resources you need to run this as well. I mean, that's really, really impressive from a technical point of view as well. And I was reading up a bit on this today. I had a little play with the demo campus that you've got there. I think it's campus.camilo.org. You can go there if you want to try this out. It was really, really interesting to have a play around with it. And I noticed that when I was reading up on some of these things, like Moodle and all these other things, they all talk about being SCORM, is that right? SCORM compliant, SCORM. I had a little look at that, but what exactly is SCORM and why is it so important for educational software?
It really depends on the market. But for example, the US and France are really, really interested in SCORM, in the UK as well, in the SCORM standard. The SCORM standard is really a packaging standard to make it possible to build a course and install it inside any kind of LMS platform. So it's really important for any LMS to be SCORM compliant, because it means that your customers or your users will be able to reuse content that has been built for them by multimedia learning companies, learning content building companies. Content that has been built for you without thinking particularly in your platform. So it's really, yeah, kind of the only great greatly used standard around. There are several versions of SCORM. Actually, there's a version 1.1, which is not used anymore, then version 1.2, which is the widely used version. And then you have SCORM 2004, which is kind of a really complicated version, which we don't support. We just support SCORM 1.2, which actually most of the content builders offer you the possibility to export their courses in SCORM 1.2 or SCORM 2004. And then there's been some work working on the SCORM 2.0 standard, and I think it's been dropped. I made a few recommendations for the standard, but I think it's been abandoned.
Well, speaking of standards too, one of my clients back in the day, I haven't done any work for him in the last 6 years or so, was a big university in Buffalo, New York, and one of the things I was doing for them was building up some campus access software so that people could, you know, get their homework and things like that all online and checking in registration and courses. And the topic came up of this notion of single sign-on, because they were using the Shibboleth system. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was a way that North American universities' campuses could sort of be linked up with the same set of credentials being able to be carried from one place to another. Do you have access to single sign-on systems with Camilo yet, or is it on the roadmap?
Yeah, we have currently OpenID single sign-on. We have LDAP single sign-on, and we just received a patch for Shibboleth for the next version of Camilo, which is contributed by the University of Geneva in Switzerland. And yeah, basically, I think we have a few more, but I'm not sure about the status. I mean, I haven't checked them, but I know the OpenID, the LDAP, and the Shibboleth ones work very well. We have people using them. And then what we do in most cases is that we implement them in universities the universities don't have a single sign-on system, so we really hack into their system and into Camilo and make an SSL connection. And so we implement a single sign-on system for the universities who require it.
Okay, great. That's and you even had the Shibboleth thing set up. It's like, okay, well, let's see, what else can I ask you about that you might already have instead of me worrying about it? So, how do you decide what's in the roadmap? Is this a group decision? It sounds like you have such a small development community. You probably just go out to lunch and go, we're going to put this in. But is there an open process to this? I mean, can I nudge things further up the list because I'm more interested in them?
Sure, we have so little outside contributions that we tend to accept anything, really. But we do so very carefully. So we always review all the security aspect of the commits that are sent to us. And there is a process of decision which is based on contacting with teachers and asking them how complex they think that would make the system. So it's not actually based on how many users would use them or how useful the system is. It's based on how easy that could make the work of the teachers. But apart from that, you have an aspect which is, you know, as I said, we include pretty much anything, but what we do is include them as disabled, and then you have to enable them to see them appear inside your interface. So it's actually a deep integration which allows you to not get overwhelmed by the number of options, which is one of the problems that Moodle has, that Ilias has, other e-learning platforms as well. But we try to make it option activable, so enableable. How you say that? So it's all options.
Very good, very good. We're just about out of time, so I want to kind of wrap up here. But we talked about a lot of aspects of Camilo, and I am impressed. I just want to say I am very impressed at the work you've been able to do, and obviously starting on a good base to get to here. But now to have taken it in the directions that you've taken it, and I tell you, I just keep thinking about that 1 million number. I just what that's just, having not heard about this until it was brought to my attention. I'm like, I'm amazed. We've asked a lot of questions. Is there anything we've left out that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
We have a lot of things going on. We have, something that we didn't talk about that is very hype at the moment as well is the mobile environment for learning. So, you know, most people now have, in the US probably, certainly have a fourth of all US citizens who have a smartphone or something like that. We are working on the version that is coming out on an adaptive theme. So, you know, when you talk about mobile stuff, you have the possibility to develop mobile applications completely, or to adapt your appearance, your display to HTML5, and then make sure that this plays out well on the mobile device. And the new version will have that, so it includes a way to see your learning resources easily without having to zoom on your mobile device.
Wow, that's very cool too. So, do you have a particular kind of developer that you're looking for, or other assistance in language translation and things? Probably all the standard things that everybody always looks for, but are there any particular needs at the moment that our audience might be able to fulfill?
We are looking for PHP developers. We generally want them to have something in relation, I mean, to have a professional activity in relation to learning some kind of university or training center, because they tend to understand better why it is so important for us to have an application that is easy to use. And then, you know, it's just because they understand the needs, they're really more efficient, generally speaking. And so that's pretty much what we're looking for. We also have a lot of translators, but we're happy to include more of these. We have recently, like, Malaysian translators that have been included. And, we're happy, really, with any kind of contribution. We have a very active forum, so people can just go and say, you know, I like this, I don't like this, so I think integrating that feature will make work easier and that kind of stuff. Recently, we included some kind of a photo retouching application online, so you can directly inside your course retouch your photos to make sure that your pictures, to make sure that they fit into your learning content that you can build inside the platform and that kind of stuff.
Wow. what doesn't it have? Are you looking for people to install the kitchen sink as well? Is there a kitchen sink module yet?
We have some kind of plug-in feature that people can propose stuff in a kind of a half integrated way, and then we review it and we integrate it. And basically, I mean, recently we really added a few tools that are really great, like text-to-speech system and the Java applet, which allows you to record the sound directly into the browser. So, you know, these are really features that we think are great for the teachers because they don't have to use so many tools outside the platform. You know, don't have to download GIMP or to hack a Photoshop license to be able to build their courses, and sound is really a great aspect of e-learning courses. So being able to generate text to speech audio or with the Google services out, or we just use what exists outside, or being able to record your own voice is really a great addition to the course building features that we have.
And so when does this evolve to become its own operating system?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe at some time in the future.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I tell you, this has really been eye-opening. I really appreciate you coming on today and talking about Camilo. And I'm sure my audience has appreciated that we're not talking about something about Red Hat for the next time in a row. But so thank you. Oh, no, because people yell at me if I answer these questions. So favorite text editor?
Yeah, Vim, sorry.
That's okay. And I know you're going to answer this wrong, too. Favorite programming language?
That's PHP. That's mostly because it's well documented. That's the better okay. Argument.
Wait. You said because it's well documented? That's a slur, yeah. Sir. That is a direct slam. It's my livelihood.
I'm sorry.
Oh, man. Well, maybe we won't have you ever back on again, but at least you came on this time to talk about things. Yes, we really do. In all seriousness, thank you very much for talking about your project. It's really been eye-opening for me, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me. I mean, we have a very little community in the US. We have a very strong one in Latin America and in Europe. So we hope that this will help a few people trying it out. You know, we have migration systems ready from Blackboard and Moodle. So
I'm sure there's a few people just listening to this now and already going to Camilo.org to check it all out. So that's thank you for being on the show. That was Yannick Warnier from representing the Camilo Project. Dan, what'd you think?
Well, much like you, I'm gobsmacked, really. I don't really know what else to say. It sounds like, I mean, they've got a million users. They've got OpenID integration and all the single sign-on stuff. They're talking about text-to-speech. I'm just amazed that I hadn't really heard about this project very much before. I first looked it up and I thought, oh, it must be like Moodle, because everybody seems to know about Moodle. But it sounds like everybody should know about this project. It's really cool. Yeah, there's so much stuff going on. And three guys as well. Impressive.
they must work 24/7. There's no way they could come up with all this stuff. It just sounds like it keeps getting bigger and better and cooler. And this is the first, as I said, as being personally interested in this because I'm running a training company and now getting asked more and more to distant learning, I did look at Moodle. I've looked at other projects in this area. I just couldn't find anything that really sort of fit. But I am now inspired, as I haven't been for the last few shows, but I'm now inspired to go check this out and see how this goes. Maybe something that introduces a whole new region of business for me. So that would be very, very cool, because the in-person Perl training market is near zero. So I haven't been doing that for a long time, and I'm really sort of missing it all. But maybe I'll start doing some distant learning on Perl or Smalltalk or Git or whatever all the cool things are that I'm really getting into now. So that's really cool. Anything else before we move on?
Yeah, I was just going to, I mean, I mentioned it quickly in the interview there, but that idea of testing resellers on their open source credentials and then, you know, getting patches back from them because you've already know that they understand the methodologies and things, that's really clever. I don't know of any projects doing that. And I think it could be something other projects could learn from.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Wow, this is what a great show! What a great show! I'm glad we got a chance to bring him on the sequence. Speaking of great shows, we do have some upcoming guests. Next week we've got Nanoc, NOC. It's a Ruby web publishing system for building small to medium sized websites. We're not going to have a show on April 18th because the TWIT team is heading out to the NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, I believe it is, and they would preempting our slot. We'd have to do a 7:30 a.m. slot, and I couldn't find anybody to co-host at that early in the day, so screw that. We're not going to have that. After that, though, we have Liz Quilty, who's a technologist, a blogger, and a New Zealander. Just we have new people from all over the world there. Citadel, which is a groupware collaboration software. We've got Spree Commerce, an e-commerce platform. Sounds really interesting. They say they're the best e-commerce platform, but I'll will be the judge of that. OpenShift, which is a free auto-scaling platform as a service for applications being provided by Red Hat. We have Jim, I'm going to mispronounce this, sorry, Jim, Jim Jagielski from the Apache Software Foundation talking about what they do as a sort of an umbrella to a lot of the projects we've actually had on the show. LiveVert, which is a toolkit to interact with the virtualization capabilities of Linux and other operating systems. And the rescheduled LibreOffice show is going to come up soon. That's a fork of OpenOffice, which is a platform that for all your office needs. Excito, which is a home media and storage server. We also have on the very short list, just waiting to confirm the dates, GlusterFS and the Open Cloud Initiative. So a lot of really great shows coming up in second quarter and the end of first quarter. Wait, already out of the first quarter. So all these shows coming up in second quarter should be really fun to go through all these. I'll be on a couple of cruise ships and stuff during the middle of this. So I know you guys will be taking over for me when I have to be gone, but we're probably going to have a show pretty much every week, which would be a lot of fun. So follow us at Floss Weekly, the Identica and Twitter handle. We post there to announce the upcoming shows and new guests as they get posted. Also, Google Plus. I post every time I book a new person, and just before the show, I also post there. Google Plus, I think you just look for Floss Weekly to find me on there. We have a live chat that we did take some questions from this week. That's at live.twit.tv when we're taping. You can find out when we're taping by going to twit.tv/floss, and all the current guests and upcoming guests are listed there. If you have a guest that you want us to interview, please email the potential guest, and have them email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. I will put them on the list. You can also follow me at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter and sometimes Identica, but also more importantly on Google+. I have about 5 or 10 interesting links I post to Google+ every day. If you follow me, you'll also find out that coming up next week, I'll be in Amsterdam, the 10th and 11th of April, and I'll be having some tweet-ups there, so pay attention to those. We also have a tweet-up in Geneva on the 19th, so I'm going to be in Europe for a couple of weeks there, and 10 days, 12 days, whatever it is between the two of those. And I'll be back in LA for 4 weeks, so watch for those there. I also just added to my schedule, I'm going to be in New York City the 24th through 27th of some month. Must be April, okay? I forgot to write the month, but I'll be there. I'm trying to line up at least a Perlmongers meeting there, and maybe some other stuff. We'll see what happens, but I'm just basically kicking back for a couple of days because, gosh darn it, I haven't spent any time in New York in years, not since basically right after 9/11. And also be doing, just got announced as well, the YAPSE North America in mid-June in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm doing the two-hour version of my Git talk, similar to the video that I posted back here a while ago. But if you happen to be a Perl guy and want to come out and hang out, YAPSE is the affordable Perl conference as opposed to the other one. So come check that out there. That's enough plugging. Dan, what should you want to plug today?
I'm wearing the Linux Outlaws t-shirt today, so I suppose I should definitely plug that. Check out Linux Outlaws. We do a weekly show where we talk about all the latest developments, not just in Linux, but also in the rest of the kind of open source world. You can Google us, or you can go to linuxoutlaws.com and you'll find out more there. We've just announced that we're going to do another Og camp, which is our kind of Well, it's actually I should be better at selling this. It's the biggest Linux and free software event in the UK right now. It's growing every year. We had about 400 people last year, and we're going to run it again this year. So if you want to find out more, you can go to ogcamp.org. It's going to be in August. I'm sure I'll tell you much more about that in the meantime. And if you want to find out anything about what I'm up to, I've just got myself a new Android 4 phone. This is a Galaxy Nexus, so I'm playing with that and I'm blogging about it and stuff. You can go to danlynch.org and find all the links and social networks and stuff there.
So I was listening to Linux Outlaws and you guys were talking about renaming OggCamp. What was the weirdest suggestion you got?
Weirdest suggestion. We had some interesting ones. We had Fosterville, somebody wanted to call it. We should call it Flosterville with the name of this show. But weirdest one, I don't know. I'm not sure I could say it on this show. It's a family show.
Better not. Well, Dan, it's always a pleasure to have you here on my show, helping me out to work with this and the times that you host. I appreciate that for the times I'm sitting out there on a cruise ship drinking little umbrella drinks and whatever else I do out there. So thanks again for being my co-host today.
No problem. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Great, great. Well, that's we're going to wrap up another show here, so we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.